Good morning. This is Maggie Jones and Natural Wonders. This week I'll be continuing to read from the Quarterly Journal of the Wisconsin Society for Ornithology called The Passenger Pigeon. We're reading Mike Mossman's essay about John Muir and his youth spent in Wisconsin's Marquette County near Portage. He and his family moved here in 1848 when John was 11, already a keen observer. Muir wrote in his book, The Story of My Boyhood and Youth, that he was excited to be moving from Scotland to a place where there would be no more grammar but boundless woods full of mysterious good things, trees full of sugar, growing in ground full of gold, hawks, eagles, pigeons filling the sky, millions of birds, and no gamekeepers to stop us in all the wild, happy land. This is the final part of Mike's essay. This landscape changed rapidly during Muir's youth, for within, quote, 3 to 4 years, almost every quarter section of government land was taken up, and in a very short time, the new country began to look like an old one, unquote. As the land came under cultivation, prairie fires ceased. Quote, as soon as the oak openings in our neighborhood were settled and the farmers prevented running grass fires, the grubs grew up into trees and formed tall thickets so dense that it was difficult to walk through them, and every trace of the sunny openings vanished, unquote. So began the demise of Wisconsin's 5.5 million acres of oak openings, of which but a very few small remnants have survived. The nearly total disappearance of this once common community makes my boyhood and youth all the more valuable. It is fortunate that although Muir described many experiences with the flora and fauna at Fountain Lake, some of his most vivid memories were of birds. He gives us some idea of the native avifauna of the pre-settlement oak openings and the response of some species to settlement. According to Muir, black-capped chickadees and white-breasted nuthatches were common year-round residents both before and after the country became settled. Robins adapted readily to the invasion by settlers. Blue jays were apparently common nesters but did not winter in considerable numbers until the country became settled. The openings and early agricultural landscape also included eastern bluebird, brown thrasher, common nighthawk, eastern kingbird, whippoorwill, northern oriole, and red-headed woodpecker. Song sparrows apparently occurred in shrubby areas, while the scarlet tanagers that Muir recalled may have nested in areas where oaks grew fairly close to one another. Meadowlarks were present, probably in both the more open savanna and in the agricultural fields that followed. According to Muir's mnemonic rendition of the meadowlark's song, it was the eastern species he found. This is consistent with other sources that document the rarity of western meadowlarks in Wisconsin until the early 1900s. Common snipe winnowed over the wet meadows of Fountain Lake. Bobolinks, gushing, gurgling, in inexhaustible fountains of song, lived far out on the broad Fox River meadows, but apparently not among either the openings or the agricultural uplands. Think of it, that paradise of birds, as Muir called it, in which he received his baptism in nature's warm heart. It was a world without house sparrows, European starlings, or rock doves. Prairie chickens and bobwhites were common and benefited from the early agricultural changes. Quote, prairie chickens came strolling in family flocks about the shanty, picking weeds and grasshoppers like domestic fowls, and they became still more abundant as wheat and cornfields were multiplied, but also wilder, of course, when every shotgun in the country was aimed at them. The booming of the males during the mating season was one of the loudest and strangest of the early spring sounds, being easily heard on calm mornings at a distance of a half or three-fourths of a mile. As soon as the snow was off the ground, they assembled in flocks of a dozen or two in an open spot, usually on the side of a plowed field, ruffled up their feathers inflated the curious colored sacks on the sides of their necks and strutted about with queer gestures, something like turkey gobblers uttering strange, loud, rounded drumming calls, boom, 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 interrupted by choking sounds. In winter, they assemble in large flocks, fly about sundown to selected roosting places on tall trees, and to feeding places in the morning, unhusked cornfields, if any are to be found in the neighborhood, or thickets of dwarf birch and willows, the buds of which furnish a considerable part of their food when snow covers the ground. Unquote. Trumpeter swans probably nested in Wisconsin in those days, though not in the Fountain Lake vicinity. They certainly migrated through the state, and Murid, quote, admired their clear bugle's notes, unquote, as they passed overhead. Within 50 years, they would be extirpated from Wisconsin, most of the Midwest, and adjacent parts of Canada. Passenger pigeons, too, were part of Muir's landscape. Although no nesting colonies occurred near Fountain Lake, large ones were still active not far away. Muir's description is thrilling. Quote, "It was a great memorable day when the first flock of passenger pigeons came to our farm, calling to mind the story we had read about them when we were at school in Scotland, of all God's feathered people that sailed the Wisconsin sky. No other bird seemed to us so wonderful. The beautiful wanderers flew like the winds in flocks of millions from climate to climate in accord with the weather, finding their food, acorns, beech nuts, pine nuts, cranberries, strawberries, huckleberries, juniper berries, hackberries, buckwheat, rice, wheat, oats, corn, in fields and forests thousands of miles apart. I've seen flocks streaming south in the fall, so large that they were flowing over from horizon to horizon in an almost continuous stream all day long at the rate of 40 or 50 miles an hour, like a mighty river in the sky, widening, contracting, descending like falls and cataracts, and rising suddenly here and there in huge ragged masses like high splashing spray. How wonderful the distances they flew in a day, in a year, in a lifetime. They arrived in Wisconsin in the spring, just after the sun had cleared away the snow and alighted in the woods to feed on the fallen acorns that they had missed the previous autumn. A comparatively small flock swept thousands of acres perfectly clean of acorns in a few minutes by moving straight ahead with a broad front. All got their share, for the rear constantly became the vanguard. By flying over the flock and alighting in front, the entire flock constantly changing from rear to front, revolving something like a wheel, with a low buzzing wing roar that could be heard a long way off. In summer they feasted on wheat and oats, and were easily approached as they rested on the trees along the sides of the field after a good full meal, displaying beautiful iridescent colors as they moved their necks backward and forward when we went very near them. Every shotgun was aimed at them, and everybody feasted on pigeon pies. And not a few of the settlers feasted also on the beauty of the wonderful birds. Oh, what bonny, bonny birds, we exclaimed over the first that fell into our hands. And that's the end of the quote from Muir. Mike continues, if you have not read the story of my boyhood and youth, please be sure to do so. It's a view of a vanished world that is part of our Wisconsin heritage. And it is an inspiration for all who hope to absorb and celebrate the simple and sometimes fleeting glories of an ever-changing natural world. And that's Mike's essay on John Muir from 1988. Thank you, Mike. I hope to continue reading some of these historical pieces from The Passenger Pigeon as time goes on. This is Maggie Jones and Natural Wonders. Thank you for listening.